Women the Engineer would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians and owners of the land on which this podcast is recorded, the Yagara and Turrbal people of Meanjin. We pay respects to their elders past and present. Always was, always will be, Aboriginal land.
Welcome to Women That Engineer, a podcast to empower female engineers to break the bias one story at a time. This is the 10th episode of the podcast, and I am so grateful by how many people have been listening to the podcast and for all the women that have been keen to share their story with me and the Women That Engineer community, of course. And for this 10th episode, I'm going to be chatting with an incredible engineer. She's a communications engineer, a NAWIC future leader, and the Women in Industry Rising Star of the Year 2024. Kate, you are obviously killing it in your engineering journey, and thank you so much for coming on the podcast to share your story. I'm really looking forward to learn more about you and your accomplishments, but also your challenges. I think we all probably have a lot to learn and be inspired of from you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here, excited to be part of a community. I know that when I was growing up, not only did I not know a single female engineer, but I didn't really even know what engineering was because of that. So it's fantastic what you're doing. Really excited.
Oh, thank you. And how great it is that you get to give back and share your story for maybe someone younger that's listening and is going to maybe follow in your footsteps. So each episode, I start by asking for a recent win or learning to share with our listeners. Have you maybe got one to share with us?
But it's just something little that's kind of been happening. It's quite nice, quite exciting for me. With the way that my team structure works, we don't have an interim manager at the moment. So the manager that I'm reporting into directly is the head of engineering of communications for the company. And there's been a few decisions lately that usually I'll double check with him before I actually talk to the client, talk externally. And I've noticed that lately he's been trusting my decision making a lot more, and he's been letting me just go with the flow and trusting that I'll be able to say the right thing to the client or to the subcontractor. So that's been really nice and really reinforcing.
Yeah, no, that is great. And you're right. Yeah, maybe that's not a super obvious win, but it's something that is... it makes you so much more confident in what you do when you don't have to go that next step up and feel like you have to kind of check that you're right. No, that's great.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I can harp on all day about the imposter syndrome that engineers, especially female engineers, feel. So when your decision making is reinforced, it really helps kind of break that down a little bit, step by step, not completely.
You're right. No, there's always something. But no, you're definitely right. It's such a win. And go you for like progressing to that point. It's great when your manager trusts you, and that's obviously because you're very capable. I also have a win. So for the past kind of 6 to 8 months, I've been on the same kind of project, really developing my modeling skills. And when I started, it was so overwhelming, and I was working under someone with like 8 years of experience, and she is so advanced, and I just felt so silly making all these little mistakes. But I had my first performance review recently, and I had some really great feedback about how quickly I was learning and picking up on things. And I too have been, you know, kind of trusted with just designing and kind of doing it my way, and it turns out okay. And that's been really nice and reassuring as well. So yeah, that's my win.
Fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. And it is performance review season, so to everybody listening, I hope they're going okay. And don't forget that it's an opportunity for you to set goals for yourself, not just to get feedback, and maybe don't focus on what you've done wrong, but maybe what you could do better.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yes, my mentor told me that. I was like, what is a performance review for? And that's exactly what she told me. Best advice ever.
It's a really good way to think about where you want to go in your career as well, and how you can make sure that someone is accountable for making sure that happens as well.
Yes, definitely. Definitely would recommend setting those KPIs to have very clear goals, I think. They make a big difference, yeah. Okay, well, I think we should probably get started into the main part of the podcast. So, Kate, my first question for you is, how did you get into engineering, and how were you first introduced to this industry that you are obviously thriving in?
Yeah, so it's a bit of an interesting one, actually. Growing up, I didn't really know too many engineers, and definitely didn't know any female engineers. My only real sort of exposure to engineering was in my family, a few of the men work in mines as engineers. And that was about it. So I didn't really have much of a deep understanding of what engineering actually looked like, especially not as a woman. So I didn't really have too much exposure to what it took to become an engineer and how to get into it. So that was not even in my realm of thinking. I had always wanted to be an architect growing up because I liked the built world. I liked art. I liked maths, but I wasn't the best at it. So I thought that all of those things together, architecture would be the best option for me. But when it actually came time to selecting things for uni, my parents had kind of sat me down and said, well, obviously we'll put architecture as the top option, but what do you want to put underneath that? And I, in my weird 18-year-old brain, I thought, well, if I don't get into architecture, I don't want to be a civil engineer because I wouldn't want to be the person that has to work with what I could have been. So mechanical engineering makes sense. And I don't know how that connection happened in my brain, but it did. And I ended up getting into mechanical engineering at UTS and decided to go down that path instead. The whole first year, didn't realize how much I'd actually like it. I'd gone in thinking, well, if engineering doesn't work out, I'll finish the degree and then use the skills and knowledge to do something more artsy. So go into building machines or robots or film sets, things like that. But after the first year of engineering, I'd learnt about this magical thing called mechatronics and decided to pick that up. And it's actually really challenging because going from knowing my whole life that I wanted to be an architect to coming into engineering, I did struggle a little bit to find my flow. So by the time I decided to pick up mechatronics, I had to go through basically a whole application process with the university because my grades weren't good enough to do the direct swap over because they had minimum requirements. So managed to pick that up after writing my 200-word reasoning all and fell in love with it. So even though I'm sure you also had a similar experience, but even though there were endless nights with lots of crying, lots of anger
Oh,
getting through
yes.
engineering, just the idea that I could build and develop these skills that could lead me to building robots just seems like the coolest thing to me.
Yeah,
So
it is
managed to
cool.
get through that. Now that I think back objectively about how I grew up, the things that I was exposed to, I realized that I was exposed to engineering a bit more than I had realized, but hadn't really put two and two together. So during high school, I decided to pick this subject called D&T CAD/CAM. And at the time, I had no idea what it meant. I didn't know what CAD/CAM was. I didn't really understand too much about design and technology, other than you go in and use the bandsaw and you make a pencil case out of timber. So picked that subject, and
Nice.
out of the class of four that ended up picking it for the year that I did it, I was the only female. But it exposed me to so much without really me realizing it. So I went to high school in Hong Kong and didn't know that back in Australia there was a whole subject in high school that people could choose called engineering studies. And I know not all high schools offer it, but to me this was maybe the closest option that I could have picked that would be
Yeah.
equivalent to engineering. I really think back now and how much value that has actually added to my engineering journey of being able to just play around and build a 3D printer over the 2 years that we were doing the subject, or play around with SolidWorks and Poser and learn about computer modeling and computer-aided design and how that actually plays a part in a project process.
Yeah,
Makes
definitely.
sense.
At my school as well didn't have like a specific engineering subject. And so I didn't really get any exposure to kind of that design thinking. And I would imagine that hands-on, like problem solving, creativity, that is literally what an engineer does. Well, what a cool pathway that was for you to kind of have gone down that path in school, want to be an architect, and then in mechanical engineering, then mechatronics engineering, and now you're a communications engineer. So, what does your career look like so far? Did you start a grad program in mechatronics, and then kind of ventured into communications just based on role availability?
Yeah, so maybe I'll go back a little bit. So actually during uni, and one of the reasons why I wanted to go to UTS over some of the other universities in Sydney is the engineering degree actually almost forces you, if you pick up the diploma as well, to do 2 6-month internships. For my first internship, I was really struggling to find something, and you have to do it before you reach a certain credit point. So I was applying everywhere. I was cold calling. I didn't really know what to do. And one thing that I was really struggling with at the time was so many people were telling me, oh, you're a female engineer, it's going to be so easy for you to find an internship. All you have to do is just meet one of their KPIs.
Oh my gosh, stop. Stop, you're making my blood boil.
So, like, I was going through this process, not understanding why I wasn't finding internships when everyone was telling me it should be so easy. And my grades weren't terrible. Like, obviously, there were a few subjects that I just had no interest in that I was getting 50 on the dot. And then the ones that I was interested in, I was getting those easy distinctions and HDs. So there was a very big variety in my grades. So I knew that maybe with the larger companies, that could be why they weren't looking at me so much. But I just didn't know. So what actually happened, my dad, who was still living in Hong Kong at the time, was talking to one of his friends that he played football with, telling them about my struggles trying to find an internship. So the wife of one of his football friends, she offered to review my resume, my CV, and kind of give me feedback, and maybe that could help me figure it out. And very fortuitously, one of the guys, he actually overheard the conversation and said, oh, get her to send her resume to me too. I work at an engineering company. So I sent it through and was talking to him on and off for a couple months. And he ended up emailing back one day and saying, well, actually, I don't really just work here. I'm like the director of the company. You should consider coming over to Hong Kong for an internship. So I did that. So my first internship, I went over to Hong Kong. So it was in Hong Kong at the airport working with a German company. And the experience that I got from that was absolutely incredible. And I wasn't necessarily working as a mechatronic engineer or any kind of engineer in particular. I was doing a lot of, but it was an absolutely fantastic insight into what different types of engineering could be and also how to kind of get around in the engineering world and how to find work. And it turned out to be that networking was just so much more important in engineering than I kind of realized it would be, especially when the general like thought of what an engineer is, they sit in a basement and don't talk to people. So for my second internship, I actually remembered back hearing of someone who came in and gave a guest lecture. So I reached out to him. Well, I need to do my second internship, but I also need to start to think about my final year honours thesis, and kind of set up a meeting and ended up landing the opportunity, but also to do my capstone project with them as well. So it worked out really well to kind of get all of that learning in the one experience, and loved it so much that I ended up working there for the last 2 years of my uni. And then for 2 years after I graduated, continued to work there. And it was absolutely fantastic. It was a very small company. It was essentially a startup that operated out of UTS. And I got so much exposure to different kinds of projects. But looking at my engineering career, I'd kind of thought that with such a small company, it's often really hard to jump up levels because the people above are going to be there for a long time. And there's maybe 20 engineers and only two or three management positions. So figured that at that stage, kind of 2 years after having graduated, I was in this very weird position where if I wanted to apply for a graduate program, it was my last opportunity to do so. And luckily enough, I actually got a call from a HR manager, and she was looking after the grad program and said, I've found you on LinkedIn. We have a grad program starting in February, and I think you should apply. And at the time I went, oh, it's a pay cut. No thanks. Bye. And then had a bit of a think about it afterwards. And she called me back a couple weeks later and sat down and had a really good talk to her about what progression within the company actually looks like and what kind of projects you would be involved with, and just the sheer scope, and decided to take her up on the offer and go in for an interview, and interviewed for this grad program. And even though I did take a bit of a step back in terms of role and responsibility and pay, it's paid off immensely after sort of 3.5 years in the company. And the amount of support that they've given me has been incredible. Definitely. But the funny thing is that when they first brought me in, I didn't really know what that meant.
Yep.
I theoretically understood like radios, communication, mobile phones, telecommunications, kind of Telstra, Optus, all those sorts of things. Yep. I didn't really know what it meant. So I went in blind and had to pull back to all of the electrical engineering that I'd done throughout my mechatronic degree and try and remember all of that. And I think not really knowing what I was getting myself into actually helped a lot in the situation.
Yeah.
But 3 years down the track, so I'm looking after the emergency telephones package as well as the GNSS, so the GPS package.
And speaking of kind of moving up and succeeding, you have been recognized by a couple of organizations as a promising young professional. And congratulations on that, because that's a really impressive accomplishment. But I'm also really curious, how did you come across these accomplishments? I mean, for myself, definitely, I haven't really known much about, organizations that support women, and I see people getting awards, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. And I'd love to know more about what that's been like.
Yeah, so there's so many different variables that have contributed to this, and I look at these awards as an accumulation of the support that I've gotten, and I guess in some sense the support that I've asked for too. And that's probably my main takeaway from this, is that a lot of these awards and accomplishments and situations that I've gotten myself into have been because I've kind of asked to either develop a relationship, or I've asked to be a part of a program, or I've put myself out there. And it's really difficult, but it goes back to that whole piece about a large part of engineering and thriving in engineering roles and even getting them in the first place is networking.
Yeah.
And it kind of comes down to that. So, I mean, there's lots of things that I've done that contributed to the applications for the programs, obviously, but for example, the last two awards that I've received have all come about because the project had started a formal mentoring program, and I noticed that the director of the project wasn't on there as one of the mentors. So in my application to join the program, I actually wrote that I wanted him to be my mentor. And a week later, one of the PNC coordinators came up to me and said, "Well, I've had a chat. He's very excited to be."
Oh, how great.
And yeah, just absolutely like dumbfounded by the fact that putting that out there into the world actually manifested into a mentorship. And
Yeah.
but I met with him once a month and found a lot of connections that we had, kind of where both of our families grew up and like where they've moved to, and we found kind of common ground. And it's really good just having those informal conversations with people at different levels than you are to understand that, one, they are also just human, and you shouldn't be scared of talking to them, because you'll get a lot of value out of just talking to people as if they are humans, and
Yeah.
not these scary overlords that control all of your income and your day-to-day work life.
Yeah.
But he was fantastic in putting me forward along with a lot of the HR people for these awards, and I wouldn't have known about a lot of these opportunities otherwise.
Yeah, we love that.
Yeah, so I guess to actually go down into the details of some of the things that were in the application for people who might be interested, I still do, and throughout uni and up until now, I still do a lot of work with universities. So we run events 4 times a year for the community, and those range from all sorts of educational events to social events. As part of that, we kind of pick and choose people on the committee to speak to an incoming cohort of students to university, and we run this program of What We Wish We Knew at uni.
Oh, I love that.
It goes really well. It started off with like kind of 10 to 50 students, and now I think we're getting like 200, 300 students joining on these calls every semester. It's fantastic.
Yeah, that's great. We'd love to see it. Yeah.
It's so good. So on top of that, I still do a lot of outreach work as well. So whenever I can find it, through either the company or whatever it might be, out to primary schools, high schools, or even just if I can volunteer as a mentor for first year female engineering students, I do that as much as I can as well. And it all kind of comes down to me not knowing any female engineers. So not wanting to explicitly be a female engineer in their life, but be an engineer that they can talk to and just be a visual representation of the variety of what engineers can actually look like.
Yeah, definitely. That's such an important thing, especially, yeah, a young female going into engineering probably feels exactly like we did, unsure, nervous, scared. And I think it's great that you provide that kind of role model, kind of figure, for them to learn from. And yeah, that's so great.
Yeah, a lot of these experiences that I'm doing as a means to give back, I'm getting so much out of them as well. It's not just a one-way street.
Yeah, it's so great to see someone so, I guess, fresh, kind of at the start of the engineering journey, full of, beans, and, they've got so much ahead of them in what they could do and where they could go, and to see that growth, kind of, it always motivates me a little bit to kind of have that same view. Oh, where can I go? What can I do? Let's get excited about this. Yeah, it's always fun.
Yeah, for sure. It's very exciting.
Yeah, but I think it's really clear to me that you are giving so much back to the engineering industry and to your community as well. And I think it's really obvious to me that you definitely stand out as someone who is so giving, but also hardworking. And I think that it's really inspiring to see someone doing everything that you do. Yeah, and I love that you said you saw these awards as a representation of how much support you've received. And I think that's such a lovely way of putting it, because I think the industry awards and scholarships and programs that we have are really important because they do make a difference. And I think it's great when people receive recognition, because as we've kind of mentioned, and it's been talked about a lot in the podcast, imposter syndrome is big, especially for women in engineering, and for those organizations to have awards, and even within companies to have awards where you're continuously kind of recognizing people, it really makes such a big difference. And congratulations on being one of those recipients. I'm not surprised that your manager and your HR and your colleagues and everybody that knows you has been putting you up for those, because I think you're such a great example of what a woman in engineering can be. You know, you're not just your job, you're so much more than that, because you do so much. And you're definitely inspiring, and I'm sure that you're inspiring our listeners as well with all the outreach you do. And I'm sure that they're thinking, huh, I didn't know that those kinds of things existed. Maybe I could do that too.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, Kate, maybe let's finish up with our podcast. I think we've touched on maybe some of your challenges that you've had. Imposter syndrome is one of them. Like figuring out what you wanted to do in engineering, going from architecture to mechanical, and then finally finding mechatronics. But then within that, where do I actually want to go? And it's been really cool learning about your journey and how it's taken shape and all of the things you do. So I think to finish up, what is something that I guess maybe you wish that you knew at the start of your engineering journey, or something you would really like to see to improve the experiences of women in the engineering industry?
So many parts of this. So pretty much, I think one main thing that I wish I knew a bit more is to go out and understand that maybe with a job description, for example, it might have 10 things and you think you only meet 5 out of the 10. Just go for it, because our males... Yes. Our male counterparts are just going for it anyway. So it's really important to just get yourself out there and try. And the worst thing with applying for a job is that they say no. Like nothing's going to happen other than that. I think as long as you're not in a situation where you're struggling with income or you have dependents or anything like that, it is fantastic to be able to go out there and just practice interviewing and going to talk to people. And then through that process, make sure that you actually stand up for yourself and what you know your skills to be and what you know your knowledge to be. I know so many women who have gone into interviews where the majority of the panel are men and maybe the only female representation on the panel is a HR person or not at all. And they've gone into situations where they're applying for this job and they've been so disheartened because of the way that the men are asking the questions or the way that they're trying to insinuate that maybe the job is too dirty for them or because it's a site, it's not a woman's job or whatever it is. I have two ways of thinking about that. Is one, screw them, they don't know you. They're old fashioned and don't understand that you have experience and skills and you are a woman, but so what? You also are able to do all of these other things. But two, maybe think about whether that particular role or job is even the one for you. There are plenty of companies out there that do care about it, do care about how their women are perceived within the company. And maybe those are the ones that you should be going for instead. But also don't be afraid to actually stand up and say that's not okay. Because a lot of the time I've noticed that people are saying these things still in this day and age because they really don't understand that it's not okay. Because no one's ever actually said it to them before. Yeah. And it shouldn't be our responsibility to do so, but we're still in that time where someone has to stand up and say something. And it's better if everyone can stand up and say it, or you can have kind of a support or a sponsor who stands up with you to support you in calling all of this stuff out. But sometimes it is down to you to say it. And it's hard because you as a woman can feel like you're in a situation where it's maybe not even safe to do so, or you're losing out on really important connections or a job opportunity or a company that you actually really want to work with, all because of one comment that's made of a team that you don't necessarily have to work with. You work with another team. But I feel like there's a lot of companies that if you're telling them that you've been made to feel uncomfortable in an interview process or just in an everyday work environment by a comment that's being made, more often than not, they will support you in trying to work through that and to try and help educate the person on why it's not okay to be saying that. And I'm not trying to point out men necessarily in this as well. I think there's all sorts of people that kind of revert into saying things because it is the norm. It is comfortable within the engineering environment to be outwardly perceived that you conform and you think a certain way as with the norm that exists within engineering. So it's all very difficult.
Yeah, no, it's such a, this question, I always love asking this question because I think the responses are always like, oh my gosh, where do I begin? You're right, go for it. I think that is such a big thing. And I think it comes back to kind of confidence in yourself. And that's hard. It's hard when you're the minority, and it's harder if you don't have role models. And yeah, and I think we all just need a little bit of a bigger support system. You know, like when you're like, oh, I would love to be in that role and opportunities there, but I just don't know if I've got the skill set. Like, go for it, apply. Like, what's worse, it happens. You go in the interview and, you know, maybe it is a little bit outside of your skill set, but then it might actually give you a clearer idea of what you need to develop to get there, you know? And that's exactly why I started this podcast. And I have the Facebook and LinkedIn communities. I want people to go there and make a post and be like, there's this role that I really want to apply for, but, you know, I feel like I don't have these skills and these skills. Can, you know, does anyone have any advice? You know, something like that. I think that we as women in engineering definitely need to help lift each other up, because it's sometimes it's really hard to do it, especially if you are, I guess, one of the only women in the room. And standing up for yourself, I think, is a topic that comes up a lot, and also kind of mixes with pick your battles. And I think you made a really great point of call it out. But then also, is this the place for you? But then also, if you are in this role and you kind of are planning to stay in this role for whatever reason, do I call out this specific situation? Like, is it big enough for me to risk losing social status within my team or my company for that? Do I then leave? And I think it's a really draining conversation that women have to keep asking themselves. And I think it's a call to everybody to just, it doesn't have to be big. You could just, if you hear someone say something, you don't have to make a big deal about it. You could just be like, oh, that wasn't very friendly. Or, oh, are you trying to be helpful with that comment? Or like, what are you trying to say? Like, can you repeat that? I think we can all, I think, maybe start to take on some of these subtle ways, because it's hard. You want to turn around and be like, excuse you, I belong here. I'm more than capable. Please keep your sexism to yourself. But that's really risky. And I think you're right. It's also, it's not our responsibility. But like, if not us, then who? You know? If not me, then like, who else is going to do it? And I think all of us should be doing it. And all of us should be trying to do it. You don't have to do it perfectly, you know? Like, no one's perfect at confrontation, and it can turn into confrontation, and that's really scary. And it's a big issue that I would really like to see improve. And yeah, I think my approach to it is trying to empower other people to make those subtle comments and back each other up, because I think that that's how we get people to keep going for it. And that's how we get people to stand up for themselves and gain that confidence. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I think companies are really starting to care.
Yes.
And not just because it's the right thing to do, but there's so much evidence coming out that shows that more gender diverse, more culturally diverse teams are more productive. They have better outcomes. Yeah. There's a lot of research coming out now saying that women-led projects are actually more consistently on time and on budget. There's so many things that are coming from actually society caring a bit more about this. And it is really great. I know one thing in major transport, for example, or in kind of major construction projects, a lot of the clients are also adding into contracts as well requirements for Aboriginal engagement and gender diverse engagement, and a requirement for companies to have gender equity action plans and all of this sort of measurement and KPIs to actually monitor and improve the diversity within engineering. There are actual financial implications now to having more diverse workforces. And it is unfortunate that techniques like this have to be used to get more diversity. But I feel like we're in that kind of point now where there was a massive rise in women in engineering, and then it plateaued for a while. And we need to be doing things to get more women in the space and more minorities in the space as well, not just women. And once we actually get to the point where there is diverse thought and diverse mindsets, then there'll just be this inherent understanding of how to be a decent human being to each other and to learn from all of the knowledge that we have to give and our very vast experiences.
Everybody benefits from a more diverse workplace team interaction, everybody. So if anyone has got an interview coming up, or you've had a recent interview, or you've had a similar situation to what we were kind of using as an example, I hope that maybe this small chat has maybe helped you a little bit. I think I'll definitely be reminding myself to keep going for it and standing up for myself and promoting myself, because I think that's really important. And remind yourself that everybody benefits from having a diverse workplace, 100%. And I have really loved our chat. I have really enjoyed getting to know more about your journey and the support that you've received and the support that you give back. And I've really loved kind of our last little conversation. And I know I always feel a little bit more empowered after it. And you've gone through your fair share of challenges, but you're succeeding. And I think you're definitely a role model, whether or not you necessarily would like to be. But I think people listening will definitely see you as a really great example of someone thriving.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Lily.
Of course.
Fantastic.
Oh, thank you. And so, everyone listening, if you've also kind of enjoyed this episode and previous episodes, feel free to join our Women Engineer Facebook and LinkedIn groups. You can connect with like-minded professionals and support each other in our conversation threads. And I can't believe that this is actually the 10th episode. Kate, you've been my 10th interview, and I've absolutely loved it. And so, I think this is everything that we've had time for today. So, thank you again, Kate, for coming on and sharing your journey. And I think we'll see everybody in the next episode.